Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Let me begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians on whose land we are gathered and pay my respects to the elders of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, both past and present. My name is Jonathan Pryke. I am director of the Pacific Islands program here at the Lowy Institute. I'm delighted to welcome you to today's event with the Honourable Daniel Goa, president of the Union Caledonian and official spokesman of the FLNKS independence movement. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a blockbuster year for the Lowy Institute's work on the Pacific. In the past year, we have produced major research products on the contemporary challenges facing Papua New Guinea and on current security and resilience dynamics facing the Pacific Islands region. In the month's time, we look forward to launching a new flagship product for the Pacific Islands program, a world first mapping aid flows down to the project level from every donor operating in the Pacific Islands region. And, of course, the renewed interest in China's role in our immediate neighbourhood is keeping us busy on a daily basis. We've also ramped up our series of events in the Pacific. In the past year, we have hosted then Prime Minister of Solomon Islands, Manase Sogavare, to hear about Solomon Islands in a post-Ramsey world. We've heard from Shadow Defence Minister Richard Marles about why the Pacific matters to Australia. We've heard from New Zealand Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Winston Peters to announce his government's reset of their relationship with the Pacific. We've also hosted a major conference in Canberra on the security dynamics in the Pacific Islands region, and most recently, Deputy Prime Minister and Treasurer of Papua New Guinea, Mr. Charles Abel, was here just a few weeks ago to talk about the PNG economy in the year of APEC. Mr. Goa is an excellent addition to this list of luminaries for a number of reasons, chief among them being that hardly any Australian would even be aware of the upcoming referendum for independence in a territory just 2,000 kilometres from where we meet here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, New Caledonia is a special territory of France in the southwest Pacific Ocean, just 1,200 kilometres east of Australia at its closest point. A part of the Melanesian sub-region, it has been a dependency of France since 1853 and a territory since 1953. For the past 30 years, the Front de Libération Nationale Kanak et Socialiste, or FLNKS, has been campaigning for independence for France. This campaign hasn't always been a smooth one, with tensions reaching their peak in the 1980s. The French government, to its credit, has managed the pathway towards the vote on self-determination first through the Matignon Agreement and more recently the Nouméa Accord reasonably well. The Nouméa Accord set the groundwork for a 20-year transition of greater autonomy for New Caledonia, a model that has been replicated elsewhere, most notably in Bougainville, also in our immediate region. As greater autonomy has been ceded to New Caledonia, it has become more proactive on the regional stage, most notably by becoming a full member of the Pacific Islands Forum in 2016. However, challenges remain. New Caledonia has a higher GDP per capita than mainland France, yet inequality is also seven times higher and is particularly distinct between the indigenous Kanak population and more recent arrivals from Europe. The economy, despite its rich nickel reserves, is highly protected and still relies on a close to $2 billion Australian dollar transfer, roughly 15% of the territory's GDP from the French state each year to maintain government services. A post-referendum identity for New Caledonia, whatever the outcome may be, is still a work in progress. So just 5 months out from the referendum, the first of potential three over the next 5 years, it is a great time to hear from the FLNKS independent spokesman. I would like to emphasise that we are very happy to provide this platform in the interest of raising awareness in Australia of this important debate occurring in our region. Much like the French government, we do not take a stand on this issue and would be very happy to provide a similar platform for alternative views. But with that said, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce Daniel Goa. Daniel is president of the Union Caledonian, the largest member of the FLNKS Independence Coalition. He was born in the Okuna tribe near Hangyen, in New Caledonia. Mr. Goa was elected to New Caledonia's Northern Provincial Assembly in 2002. And to the Congress of New Caledonia in 2009. In 2012, he was elected Union Caledonian President and today serves as official spokesman for the FLNKS Independence Coalition in the lead up to November's referendum on self-determination. I had the great pleasure of meeting Mr. Goa in New Caledonia just a few months ago, and while we just had an hour together, I could have listened and learnt from you all day. It's a delight to be able to return the favour and host you here at the Institute today. And just before I hand over the podium, just a bit of housekeeping. You'll note that we have translation services for everyone in the room. The device will only work once the headphones have been plugged in. Channel 1 is for English, channel 2 is for French. Live translation service will take place through the presentation and through the Q&A. And with that, over to you, Mr. Goa. Thank you.
Greetings to all. I'd like to thank all the people who contributed for the organization of my presence and that of the FLNK's delegation in this country today. I pay tribute with great respect and profound humility before the spirit of the elders and the people of this Aboriginal land, but also before you, the citizens of this great country. As you already know, 4th November next, there will be the first referendum organised under the framework of the Noumea Accord. This date is of capital importance and historic for the Kanak people because it brings to an end 164 years of uninterrupted struggle for our people. Indeed, on 24 September 1853, there began a period of colonization by unilateral act of seizure of our country. France today justifies this historical fact by saying that it was an acknowledged practice under international law at the time. It was the right of subjection of our people. France, which was the country that declared on 17 June 1789 the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, after having freed itself from the yoke of its nobility and its royalty, did not hesitate to completely violate this solemn Declaration of Intentions and to implement the colonization of several peoples on the planet. Including the Constitution of 1958 during the foundation of the Fifth Republic. This universal declaration of rights, although it did that, it has never actually implemented it in fact. And with respect to its overseas territories, which were still under colonial control, in the Noumea Accord, this is what we call the shadows of this period. The French state holds that this period was not devoid of light because colonization brought its share of progress. Medicine, Western education, religion, social progress, and economic development. For us, the Kanak people, we only see in it shadows and regression. Indeed, the freedom of a people does not have any price. It cannot be negotiated, and it cannot be bought. To take up the declaration of Jean-Marie Djibaou, he said that as long as one single Kanak remains standing, he will fight for his freedom. That should tell you the importance of this date of 4th November. And the symbolism of this local referendum. Indeed, under Western law, international law, you can call on the people to decide on a question which is fundamental for it. For us, coming from consensual societies, asking us if we want to become Kanak again, at home in our country, doesn't have at all the same significance and doesn't have any meaning. We are this country. We are this land. It is Kanak, and it will remain Kanak forever. Indeed, the meaning that we give to this referendum is that we have a large arrived population that we acknowledged and invited as early as 1983. As victims of history, to make our country theirs. That's the meaning that we give to this referendum, which is in fact addressed to them, to ask them to confirm their intention to become people of our land. My Melanesian brothers present here will understand all the full meaning of my statements because that is just a legal and constitutional transcription of our sacred tradition of welcoming. the interest that we give to this referendum is found in itself in the question itself, which is not deciding on the question of whether to leave France or remain, but to ask the entire population in question, if they wish to accede to full and complete sovereignty in the Canic country. That is also the true meaning of the word sharing, a fundamental value in Oceania, which is incorporated in this question. And if the no vote wins, we'll ask again these peoples, these populations, to answer again, twice again in 2020 and 2023. And if they still don't want to, well, then we'll negotiate our independence with our colonising power through bilateral meetings between the French state and the FLNKS, the representative of the Kanak people, the First Peoples. This 4 November is the end point of our struggle, of our combats and sacrifices endured sometimes at the price of blood by our ancestors. It is the end point and the acknowledgement of a struggle which took shape and was formalized in 1977, when independence forces united and grouped together as an independence front. In 1984, the FLNKS was created to bring the country into a process of UN decolonization, which became effective on 2 December 1987. Following a series of events on the ground, the Matignon Accord was signed on 26 June 1988 for a term of 10 years, leading to a self-determination referendum in 1998. It laid down the basis for a future country with three major aims. The first aim was sharing of political power and governing power with the creation of provinces. Secondly, the economic and social rebalancing of the country through major capital transfers. And the third aim was the implementation of a new institutional framework. So this agreement was signed under the authority of Michel Rocard, who was then French Prime Minister, and was symbolised by the handshake between Jean-Marie Djibaou and Jacques Lafleur. The referendum provided for under the Matignon Accord gave way on 5 May 1998 to a new political accord with a 20-year term, the Numeer Accord. And that was signed with the aim, or the political aim, of transferring irreversibly all the governing powers internally to prepare the country for accession to full sovereignty. So it can be divided into two distinct periods. The first were the first 3 5-year mandates between 1998 and 2014, which were devoted to the acquisition and transfer of governing powers with a timetable organised politically. So the second period was the last 5-year period, 2014-19, allowing to transfer the royal or sovereign governing powers and the last so-called mixed powers under Article 27, such as audiovisual, higher education, research, budgetary law, legal review, and local authorities. So the accord provided that during this last 5-year period, a referendum was possible at any time if it was decided by a qualified majority of 65% of the votes in the New Caledonian Congress. In the event of a decision not to opt for a referendum during the 5-year period, the French state was obliged to implement this referendum 6 months before the end of the 5-year mandate in May 2019, which brings us to the date of 4 November next. The Numeer Accord is an integral part of the French Constitution under Chapter 13 and Articles 76 and 77. This constitutional guarantee gives full legal force to this accord, which is set in stone. It formalises the transfer of the internal sovereignty with the accompaniment of the French state, but also gives a right of self-determination to the citizens, whose shape were defined by a special consultative electoral body. On the single question of accession to full and complete sovereignty, that's the subject of the referendum coming up at 4th November. So, after having given you, described you the meaning of this referendum for us, the Canucks, what's really at stake in this election? If the yes vote prevails, the Kelowna people, as defined by the consultative electoral body and the provincial bodies, will have decided to accede to full sovereignty. Then a period of transition will open to prepare for the handover between France and Kanaky Nouvelle-Calédonie for the transfer of all the attributes of sovereignty, international recognition and the updating of international treaties. This sovereignty, as translated in our social project, will consist politically in a deformatting of the French system in force, which is based on an economy of exploitation and on a standardized and protectionist economic framework. Taking back control of our natural resources and of our key sectors, controlled currently by French multinational companies, will allow us to better redefine our social model to ensure a more equitable distribution of wealth by exploiting our main resource, nickel, from which we only draw salaries at the moment. The rest leaves the country. This economic, legal and social deformating will be a question for internal politics at the beginning of our sovereign journey, and the emergence of our new social model will be a priority. On the regional level, we will take our rightful place and strengthen our relations with our neighbouring countries in Melanesia, who have always been at our sides during our struggle and have indefatigably defended us, and I take this opportunity to thank them warmly and express to them our gratitude. Also, our ambition is to safeguard the status quo which exists with the two regional powers, which are of Australia and New Zealand, and to fully play our role in Oceania. Our history and our cultural bases will mean that we respect the necessary status quo balances for the French presence in the area so that it can carry out its international outreach and develop a fruitful cooperation between the two parties, but also for all of Oceania, for which we hope to be the ambassadors with France and Europe. Internationally, we'll ensure that our sovereignty is recognised and our international status with other states, and we will apply for membership of the UN. Politically, what is at stake for us in Oceania? Global warming, the rising of the seas, preservation of our natural environments, and the increasing rarity of atmospheric oxygen. We will fully engage next with our neighbouring countries to engage in this struggle of the future, and we can assist in building an indivisible solidarity so that we will not be the only ones who pay for this ecological environmental waste that the great powers have been engaging in the most complete, reckless and illogical manner possible. We are the peoples of the ocean, and that is a shared heritage. We will fight so that to no longer be sidelined when decisions are taken which fall upon us and which impact on us and then suffer the consequences of them. If the no vote wins, political life will not be disrupted, and we will actively engage in preparing for the next two referenda. You've understood the meaning of it for us, and for us it's just a question of time. And you know that time in Oceania is measured differently. Some people look to the future and see riots, risk of violence or degradation of our economy. This will not be the case. Indeed, our social system, which is too unjust, which no longer distributes wealth, will quickly reach its limits, whether we're with France or not. We must, for that, prepare ourselves for the trials to come, which are completely separate from the political stakes. The question of our independence is changing our social model to re-establish a more just society, a more egalitarian, and create a society where we live better, which we all aspire to, and try and leave this profit-at-all-costs society that we currently live in. This is the aim of our social project, on which we've worked a great deal, and that we'll continue to develop so that it can be as pragmatic as possible. I should point out that our history can be divided into four major periods. And now the question is to open up. The first period was colonization, which took place from the unilateral seizing of possession until the last attempt to relaunch a settlement policy. In 1972, there was an initiative taken by Pierre Mesmer, who was then the Overseas Affairs Minister, encouraging, through an administrative ministerial order, the migration of new populations to try and counter the desires expressed strongly by a new generation of mechanics. But this gave new impetus to the rise of the independence feelings. The second period was decolonization, which was formalised in 1987 by the inclusion of New Caledonia on the list of territories which were not autonomous and to be decolonised. And through the Matignon Accord, internally, a political process where France, for the first time, acknowledged the colonial realities of the country and undertook to erase them. In a nutshell, it is these two political accords which have governed life in New Caledonia over the last 30 years and which will come to an end at this referendum on 4 November. The third stage was neo-colonization, which, through successive waves of migration, destabilized and undermined our social model. It was through migration, but also took place on an economic and social level, as it was organized as a true society of exploitation, whose vanguard were the French multinational corporations. Concerning immigration, these new populations were often aggressive, socially speaking, did not have sufficient time to go through a normal assimilation process. We suffered their presence, and the effects were immediate in the imbalances that they created in society, where we found our own populations excluded from an economic, political, and social system which was perpetually changing, and where we no longer found a place. The implementation of a frozen electoral body, negotiated by the FLNKS under the Numeric Accord, finally allowed us to put an end to this settlement policy, which was either explicitly wished or encouraged passively by the French state. Now, even if we can't close our borders because we are part of Europe, we won't in the future be politically destabilized. Time is playing, in fact, in our favor because we are, demographically speaking, the most active. The fourth period was an openness towards the world, already by seeking our future national status, but also by taking our place fully in the current regional issues and those to come with the increase in power of the Indo-Pacific zone to take on an expression which is very dear to President Macron. During his speech given at Noumea last May, President Macron said two things were very important for us. First, after 164 years of colonization, he discovered that New Caledonia was in fact a real jewel for France. Second, he declared that France would be less beautiful without New Caledonia and that she needed us. We welcome this declaration with great interest because it confirms implicitly the viability of our quest for accession to our sovereignty and the role that we could play in regional relationships. This speech by President Macron opens the political avenue to us, and we must work with it. But we will do it under a sovereign framework so that we once more will not be relegated to the sidelines, as was the case for 164 years. The road to the future is opening irremediably for the Kanak and Caledonian people towards a better society with more social justice and sharing, and towards a social model which better reflects the spirit of Oceania. Our youth is educated and competent, and it must pick up the baton, and we will give it the keys to work towards harmonious development of our country, but also in respect of our future generations, to safeguard for them and reap the fruits of this heritage. This is our roadmap. That today is our message of hope and our wish to materialize a greater engagement in Melanesia, but also in Oceania, to reweave together the links that have always been present and strong and which have united us since time immemorial. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you for a fascinating and insightful presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, we now have roughly 25 minutes to take questions from the floor. Also, for consistency of the recording, if possible, please ask your question in English and allow for the translation to be made in French. It will be then, Daniel can reply in French and it will be translated back into English through the headsets. As chair, I will take the luxury of the first question. Mr. Goa, I do want to probe you a bit on the economy. In your speech, you mentioned bringing resources back to the people of New Caledonia. Besides the people themselves and tourism, your nickel resources are, of course, the most valuable resource in New Caledonia. How would you intend to bring nickel back to the people? And furthermore, how would you guarantee the level of services currently afforded to the people of New Caledonia should France no longer provide its financial support after independence?
Nickel brings New Caledonia . We have a quarter of the world's resources in nickel. So how do we develop this wealth? You should know that today, nickel is mined, treated, processed, and exported. It's exported at the current rate of nickel. But we know that nickel today has, in terms of content, it has four or five other metals which are also important: cobalt, manganese, scandium, and others. The prices are not the same, but we sell nickel for the going rate for nickel, because we can't really do. We can't separate them on site, because there are others who want to do it elsewhere to take the profit. So we need to put a stop to that. The second thing we need to do is that the resource should allow New Caledonia to finance its public infrastructure. Today, the tax regime which is in place doesn't allow New Caledonia to derive this revenue. So that's the work that we are trying to do, beginning to do. Because nickel, as I said, it's a major resource for our little country, for our little population, and it's not normal that today New Caledonia and its population don't benefit from it. You know that we have three major nickel groups, and out of these three, There's only one which really benefits the country and the others don't. Apart from salaries that they distribute to employees. And obviously we can't stand for that.
Questions? Yes, please.
Thank you. Yvonne Carrillo-Hoffman from the Australian Museum of Pacific Collections. Thank you for your talk. I got two questions for you. In 2011, I went to the Melanesian Arts Festival and I was in Hengen. During the visit there, I was with the New Vanuatu delegation and we had a lot of time to talk about independence for New Caledonia as West Papua with some of the chiefs there at the cultural centre. One of the issues that they were raised by the chiefs, it was their concern of the increasing migration from expats from France to New Caledonia with the aim of overpopulating the native indigenous people of the land. So then they were able to vote for this referendum and be able, you know, to push the votes in the interest of France. I just wanted to ask whether you have any comments on that. The second question is, what's going to happen with all the people who, at the moment, they are being sick with cancer in the lung lining as a result of the Nikon mining operations, and they come into Australia mainly for cancer treatment. I wanted to know whether you have any comments on who is going to be taking care of these people. Thank you.
La première question concerne
the first question concerning the neocolonialism. So that's the because I situate that in the story that I told of that's a period between France and New Caledonia, which was that began with Pierre Mesmer. Which authorized this policy of migration. So at the moment, they're only a minority part of the population, 30%. We fight for our independence. We're convinced that developing the country and giving a better life to the population, and for that we need to be independent. And develop new relationships with France. So today, the work which is done through the country to try to inverse this relationship. We have 341 tribes, and each communal organization has between 6, 10, and 20 tribes. And within each tribe, we try to redefine each the history of each tribe with France, and we try to convince them that they shouldn't hesitate in going to vote yes. And we've also got a social project developed, which will be the basis for our constitutional project. And this social project presents the basis of the future country to come, and the organization of institutions, sharing of powers, representation of communities, because the Caledonian community is composed of a multitude of different populations coming from different countries and different cultures. And thus, we want to represent them. We want to use that as a wealth, as a force, a strength, and use that in the organization of our institutions. We've provided for a chamber of representatives in which all these communities can be represented. Beyond that, we've organized since last year these visits in the countryside, and we've put in place conferences and symposiums, seminaries to try and make people understand that the fear of the unknown, and we find that they can find the response to their fear in the social project we propose, but also to tell them that Caledonians have a responsibility. We can't leave to our children a society of mismanagement and exploitation, and it's our shared responsibility to improve the conditions of living for all the populations. And thus, that's the meaning of our struggle, and we continue to follow this policy, and we hope that we will be heard on the 4th of November. It's not easy, because obviously the politics of fear is raising its head, and therefore between arguments made concerning our projects, we have opposite fear. The fear of losing France, who's going to pay for this, who's going to pay for that, etc. So we try to give the answers and to show to people that France isn't paying as much as they think. And that, if there was a little less mismanagement and exploitation. So that's on your first part of your question. The second part. Could you repeat it, please?
The second question, it was about the nickel mining and the people who are actually being affected with lung cancer as a result of being exposed. And they are coming to Australia mainly for medical treatment. We have met a few and talked with them, with a few of them over the years, and we just wanted to know what the situation will be with them if France withdraw from New Caledonia.
France withdrawing. It's not France which is responsible for that. They are. It's the Caledonians. There are measures, legislative measures, in place to protect workers, which haven't been taken. But when people are brought to Australia, it's New Caledonia that pays for the travel. I'd say that also we bring people to Australia for diabetes, for heart attacks. We go to Australia. People go to Australia for sicknesses caused by products that we import. So there's also a spirit of preserving, conserving, protecting the health of our people, which is not respected. And we say that our responsibility is that we need to make people live better, not only in what they eat, but also just generally.
My colleague, Diant, also a research fellow here in the Pacific Islands program.
Mr. Goss, thank you very much for the presentation. So yeah, on the 4th of November, the population of New Caledonia will have to answer the question, would you like New Caledonia to accede full sovereignty and become independent? Do you think that there is a common understanding between the independentists, the loyalists, and the government among these terms, among this, the terms of these questions?
For us, the independence militants, since the 1980s, between 77, we've talked about independence. We've been asking for independence. That's the term that we used during the decolonization period after the war. So we use this term. But during our discussions today, when we have 198 signatories on the Numera Accord, who all accept the word independence that's written into that accord, the people that we call the royalists, the loyalists, they said, no, we don't want to see this word independence. So we agreed on the word sovereignty. So the Numera Accord talks about sovereignty, but for us, the independence militants, we've fought for 20 years, but we've always remained faithful to what was written in that text, because we didn't want to raise any more questions. Our objective, sovereignty, independence, it's the same thing. And they're loyalists. They use the word independence to create fear. And that's what bothers them the most, because now we use the word sovereignty. So they're... So we ask for sovereignty and independence. So suffice to say that for us, it's It's not the word that's going to change the meaning of our claims. It's a word which is manipulated by those who are against independence because the politics of fear that I talked about just now, well, the word independence is part of that.
Hello, Mr. Goa. Thank you so much for sharing your vision with us. My name is Cammy Webb-Gannon. I'm from the University of Western Sydney. I'm wondering if you can comment on the difference around the enthusiasm and support for independence amongst generations. So are older generations more supportive of independence, younger generations, difference between men and women, and also between regions, so North, on Grande Terre, South Island, the Loyalty Islands. Is, you know, what are the kind of regional and, I guess, demographic differences in the support for independence? And one more question. I'm wondering what you think about independence and decolonisation. If independence does become a reality, how much closer is New Caledonia to decolonising? Thank you.
Could she repeat the second question, please?
So I'm just asking about the, I guess, kind of difference between independence and decolonisation. If New Caledonia does become independent, how much closer is New Caledonia to be, you know, to being a decolonised kind of territory? And if you don't get independence, I suppose, is the reverse of the question, are you still continuing on a decolonising path?
Well, I'm going to respond first of all to the last part of your question. The Kanak people has been in New Caledonia for 4,000 years. But that's what the archaeologists have uncovered so far. Our struggle for our dignity, because it was taken from us, has lasted 164 years. I was thinking about time for people in Oceania. A yes vote or a no vote that delimits the end of a period and opens a new period, which will be called the period, a transition period to organise a new state, negotiate interdependencies with other countries and France around in the region. And if the response is no, we will still be there. We'll still be there the next day. And if it's no, it means that people want to remain colonized. And we've said that our time of being colonized is over. And as Jean-Marie said, as long as there's a single Kanak standing, he will still fight for his independence, because it's not a question of accountability or accounting of how to finance it. It's a question of dignity. So I hope I've responded to the second part of this question. So the first part, could you repeat it, please?
Just wondering about, so amongst the Kanak population, what are the differences in support for independence between men and women, and regional differences and age or generation?
Between men and women, there's no difference. We are all independence supporters. But in terms of regions, the Islands province and the North, which is majority for independence, but in the Southern province, which covers almost half of the voters, and the surrounding communes that we call Greater Noumea, Mondor, etc., and Dumbia. In terms of the distribution, geographical distribution, all of the population, anti-independence population is found around Noumea in the south. In terms of ages, the elders, they went through the violent events of the 80s. They understood the meaning, because the meaning of this fight, I was talking about dignity, that since 1853, journey with France has been punctuated with violence. It's been violence every 30 years. It became a cycle. And so up till 88, and there we signed a period of 30 years of peace. The difference is that those who went through those violent events knew that they were part of a journey that began in 1853. But the youth of today, who today are 20 years old, they haven't lived that. And they've been to school. Which means that they think differently. They have different networks, different ways of expressing themselves amongst themselves. And it's good to point out this issue because today, those who take the risk of raising the spectre of fear, raise the spectre of sowing that amongst the youth of today. We think about this before every declaration by the FLNKS, and we try to include the youth in our movements because we send them out to try and talk to the youth, to develop a political culture, and to at least make them aware. Because today we're in a period where there are increasingly fragmented society, and it creates painful situations, and it's up to these people to take the things in hand and then continue to build. I hope I've answered your question.
Jacques Broquet, I'm a member of the Law Institute. My question relates to that quest for sovereignty, and what I'm hearing is in a world with a lot of power play between countries that are much bigger than New Caledonia, how can New Caledonia or Kanaky will be able to protect its sovereignty, especially when the wealth that New Caledonia is offering, whether it's nickel or whether it's fishing rights, will be targeted by countries like China and will create imbalances or potential imbalances in the region, which at the moment France is able to maintain together with Australia and New Zealand?
New Caledonia is not all alone. And the ambition of New Caledonia is to integrate or to assume its full role in this region next to Australia, New Zealand and the other Melanesian countries and the Polynesian countries, because the ambitions of great powers in this region of the world, we have our word to say on that. We can't simply witness the exploitation of the standby while the sea is exploited. I think that's a bit the meaning of my answer. New Caledonia is aware of the risks. The decision that we took with Melanesian countries and the ambassadors and the Prime Minister of Vanuatu, we looked at these questions, this risk, and with the politicians we've met here in Australia, we've talked about this question of partnership, but also the role of balance in this region, balancing the great powers in this region. So I think we can't ignore anyone in this area because we have our word to say on it, and our voice will be stronger if we all work together.
So I'll take my privilege as chair to ask the final question. So regardless of the outcome of the referendum process, New Caledonia is going to remain fractured largely along ethnic lines. How will you work to create a shared sense of New Caledonian identity to ensure your land remains prosperous, stable and united into the future?
La Nouvelle-Calédonie.
Today, New Caledonia. It's not France. Which means those who claim that they are French, that are citizens of France and want to vote in the referendum, I bet that if they were in France, they'd be treated as illegal immigrants because they don't have any French culture. They're people like us, but they refuse that. So it's a little psychological. And I think that the New Caledonian identity is evident every day. We need more social justice, more equity, better distribution of wealth. That they're the conditions that would favour the creation of a common and shared identity. And it's difficult if most of the wealth go offshore. That's not the most opportunity for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of our time this evening. Thank you all for attending, and let me also thank Daniel for an engaging speech and for fielding our questions. It's great to see New Caledonia get more attention here in Australia, and you're always welcome here at the Institute, Mr. Goa. Well, I'm sure everyone in the audience will be keeping a close eye on the referendum come November, but even sooner, we'll also be tuning in at 1 a.m. this Monday for the World Cup final between Croatia and France. Mr. Goa has assured me that he's not a bandwagon supporter. He has, in fact, been a Croatian supporter for quite some time. Ladies and gentlemen, let me also just give another quick plug for the upcoming Low Institute Pacific Aid Map. We'll be launching it on August 9th in Samoa alongside the Foreign Ministers meeting, and again in Canberra on August 13th. So please keep refreshing our website come August to take a look at this exciting and substantial contribution to the Pacific region. With that, thank you and good evening.